listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Aren't you ever?
Aren't you ever? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What do you think, Paul?
What? What do you mean? What do I think about what? Don't hit me with questions as soon as we get started here. You're throwing me.
I know. I'm sorry. You're a late riser.
You're looking very kempt, though. I tell you that.
What is
one of those things that you never you never hear the positive of that. You always hear unkempt.
That's true.
But you never hear kempt. You know?
Yeah. That's
so. And I'm saying you're. I might also say that you're very ept. It's another thing you never hear. You always hear inept.
Oh, that's
but
nice.
Never ept. You're ept and kempt. Just want you to know. Well, we're out of time.
I'm sure how I feel about
it. Oh, look at that, would you? Okay.
Sorry. Thank you anyway.
I have had too much coffee. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
And we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Described as a romantic comedy which gleefully examines the ways in which men and women make each other miserable, women are crazy because men are assholes, and I'm saying assholes,
Michael. Yeah, apparently you are.
This asterisk shit is for the birds, okay? Asshole. You could say assholes on television now. We
That's
can certainly
what you're
say
telling
it here.
Me, yeah.
So, anyway. Women are crazy because men are assholes. Brings to life five couples who come together for brunch to celebrate Nicole and Dylan, who after a two-month internet courtship meet for the first time. The event proves to be the last reasonable thing any of them will do that day. Secrets will be screamed, sex will be weaponized, and sanity will have its throat sliced. Oh, do you guys, I don't know, the sound effects? Do that. There we go. Today we are joined by the playwright and director of the smash hit production, a West Coast premiere currently playing at the Macha Theater, which just extended, by the way, with a killer review in the LA Times
yes,
today.
It did.
As well as one of the stars of this show, please welcome Brad T. Gottfried and Blake Boyd.
Thank you.
Hello, gentlemen.
I like that applause.
I do.
Like that? Well, you brought him. You brought him. That's all I'm saying. Thank you, gentlemen. So good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Very, very excited. Yeah. Very excited.
Sounds so, Mr. Paul Strolley.
Before we chat with these gentlemen. Yes.
Yes. How was your week, sir?
My week was good.
Yeah.
My
you were so busy. Good. You posted on Facebook this morning. All
I did.
That you're doing.
I posted the usual nude shots. Just the little boudoir numbers that I put up there. Yeah. You know.
There were a few people that reacted to that. Yeah.
Yes. No, no.
Take these down.
Take them down. No, no. Really good week. Finished a play yesterday that I've been working on with the lovely Sissy Connor. We got our first draft
done. Right. Lovely is right.
And we immerse ourselves completely in tech for the short film that I was part of. I get to see the post-production work tomorrow, and then we go to, and I'm really looking forward to this on Saturday.
Yeah.
I get to go to the studio where the composer has his little orchestra assembled. And get to
so nice
sit
to
there
the
while they score it. Yeah,
that's,
which
that's
that aspect always fascinates me. So
one of the best things.
I love music. I love knowing nothing about it, though. I don't want it. I don't want to know the mechanics. Keep that man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Keep it magic. I don't want to know the magic trick. I just want to appreciate it. So that's why I'm really astounded to happy to do that. Yeah. And how about you? How was your week?
Very well, thank you. Working on a couple wonderful theater projects. This one that we're talking about being one of them today.
You wouldn't mean women are crazy because men are assholes.
Yes,
would
I would
you?
Mean that one.
Okay,
yeah,
good. But sorry to interrupt you, but do you actually refer to it that way, or do you? I mean, do you actually say it?
Almost all the time we just say women are crazy. You just don't want to say the full title amongst ourselves. But
right.
Sure, when we're talking to, pitching it to anybody else, yes. We use the word assholes.
Okay,
you know.
Okay.
But ABC7 did not use it. George Pinocchio was out a couple of weeks ago, did a great piece on us, and they couldn't say it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they showed the poster with the asterisk.
They showed the poster,
so,
okay.
As the Times cleverly did their thing with the logo of the show today, and they kind of condensed it, so but they talk about it in text.
Okay. I'm sorry, Michael, I interrupted your week. I was just curious
about
that.
My week is now over.
Is it? I'm so sorry.
Out of time.
Well, Michael, you're crazy because I'm an asshole, apparently.
You said it.
No, really.
I didn't. No. Just a great week, a great killer show at the nightclub last Sunday, and always enjoy having that, on our hands.
Do you two know about Michael's club? Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's
I saw Joan Ryan there a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. She was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I heard.
At the Federal.
Yeah.
Really, really great.
And we'll get Brad and his wife there. If you ever have a day off.
Yeah.
You like that kind of music?
Yeah, I love trying new things. So, yeah. Love live entertainment.
And your wife, does she like that kind of music?
She yeah, I think so. Like my wife is a workaholic, so we have not done as much kind of leisurely things as we should have, you know.
Well, and it's time
be good
to get you out.
Yeah, we should.
Good food. It's great entertainment, you know. That's what all we
I would love to go. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And that's
we don't often make time for that. My wife's the same way. Yeah. Monica's just always
you haven't been
like,
to the club in a good year.
Really, has it been that long?
Yeah.
No, I'm there. I just go when you're not.
Oh, really? You are an asshole.
I am.
So how long have you two known each other?
Oh, it seems longer every day.
Way too long.
Michael, enough of our caterwauling. Yes, oh, by the way, I want to tell
our
listeners about...
just plummeted.
Now we have to have the little the parental caution, the parental advisory.
Yes.
I also want to mention about 25 minutes after the hour, I'm going to have a review of the show that I saw on Saturday, which was astounding. This is the clothing optional, Dirty Laundry Lit, that Jeff and Natasha Dionne were here last week. Yes, and
I'm
going to review them about 25 minutes after the hour. So
awesome.
But please give the gentleman to your left the intro he is so due.
I will, indeed. Happy to. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, wrote, directed, and executive produced the feature film The Movie Hero, starring Jeremy Sisto and Peter Stormare. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes,
good enough, huh? Which played at over 20 film festivals worldwide, winning numerous awards, including first prize at the Rhode Island Film Festival and the Audience Award at the Austin Film Festival. His second feature, Orgies and the Meaning of Life, was released into theaters and on DVD by Cinema Epic. Saying it right. It's not spelled the usual way, but...
Yeah.
In September, Cinema Epic in September 2009, it played at a half dozen festivals, including the London Independent Film Festival. His first web series, Sex and Love Conspire to Destroy the World, was just sold to My Damn Channel for release in the fall of 2013. Please welcome playwright and director, Brad T. Gottfried.
Thank you. Supplemental. No one's ever done that. No one's ever done the supplemental applause.
Right.
He is very encouraging.
Blake will ride this play with me until it kills
us both.
Where do
you buy these guys?
Just luck.
Oh. Brad, I know you've probably answered this question a dozen times, but our listeners, I'm sure, would like to know. The inspiration for this is personal.
Personal. I was I fell in love with a great, passionate woman, and one of those things where it was so passionate, we went insane, you know, and every 48 hours, it was, should I marry this woman, or should one of us kill the other person so we can put us out of our misery? And toward about the middle of this, we'd get back together and break up and get back together. Toward the middle of it, I said, I have to write this down or I'm never going to figure out why I keep putting myself into it. Both why I couldn't make it sane and make it functional, or why I just couldn't leave it alone, why it kept drawing me back in.
Okay.
So I wrote a screenplay version. I handed it around to about 10 different people, and everybody said it was... filled with a bunch of irredeemable characters that are insane. And why would anybody want to go see it? And so I'm like, you know, I want to go see that. So I decided to put it in a play, because theater is much more controllable from the production standpoint. And audience have loved it from opening night. Opening night, it's just people ultimately, you know, the LA Times review said the nicest thing, which is it feels... tap some universal nerve, and I think that's
I saw that in the review today.
That's really what we're most proud of. You know, yes, we get laughs, and it's as performers, I know Blake will tell you that there's nothing better than a live audience laughing at you. But the tapping the truth of kind of relationships is really, really.
You also bring up a great point in the difference between a screenplay and a play, and I think that you have the opportunity with a play, and of course, I'm sure it will. You know, it's amazing how people will take risks on screenplays that they wouldn't have before when they see how successful a play it is. But the fact that because you have with a theater audience, I want to say they're captive, but you have them, they know they're investing themselves in an evening. I think film watchers are a little more passive about the entertainment than theater right. people are. Right. And you have the opportunity to give them that character for, what is the show, an hour and a half, two hours?
Yeah.
And they have that time to spend with that person, and it's more visceral.
Visceral, great word. Yeah, because the energy exchanged from audience to performer and performer back to audience just can't be duplicated unless you're there live with them. And especially with this play where it's about the intensity of the emotions, there's no way a movie or any filmed entertainment could ever duplicate that. And that's why you say it could be eventually filmed, but I will take this until the last person on earth has seen it live before I would want to transfer into film, because I think it will not be the same for people. Yeah. You know, like, part of the specialness is our performers literally go insane on stage. You know, we do not play for laughs. We play for the intensity of emotion.
No, you play it for you don't play for laughs because you lose them. An audience knows when they're being talked down to. Yeah. You gotta, you know, I grabbed this while you were speaking because it echoes something you just said. I want to read the first line of the Los Angeles Times review because it's so fitting. Seldom have I been part of a more enthusiastic and vocal audience than the one at the Macha Theater for Women Are Crazy Because Men Are Assholes. And the thing is, I want to say what an accomplishment that is. Theatrically, that's an accomplishment anywhere. Mm-hmm. But in Los Angeles, to get that was Michael, the line I always use, it's one of God's great mysteries. I'm working on an interactive theater piece now, and a lot of times in L.A., people are too cool for school. They're not going to allow themselves to get that, you know, quasi-interactive or playful. Yeah. I mean, look at Tony and Tina's Wedding. Yeah. Tony and Tina's Wedding ran in Chicago for 16 years. It ran here for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So, so to accomplish that here in what is a tough theatrical climate anyway, and even more tough to get that sort of response, really says something about it. This is the West Coast premiere, correct?
Yes. We workshopped it a couple years ago when I initially kind of was just figuring out what to do and what we had. Then we took to Chicago for our official world premiere for basically a 3-month run.
Where did you play it in Chicago?
We played at 3 different theaters. The Mercury, which was initially like our test, like, okay,
that's will the one on Southport, right? The
Mercury Theater? Exactly.
Right. Next to Music Box Theater.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we played at the Greenhouse in Lincoln Park, and then we played at the Biograph. The smaller theater.
Oh, it's the Victory Gardens.
Yes.
At the Biograph. Yeah. Wow, you play nice venues there.
No, they're beautiful and they were much. You're right. Chicago was shocking to us actually how enthusiastic they were.
Oh yeah.
You know, like the reviewer at LA Times spoke to the audience in Chicago every night. It was like that.
That's
so
great.
It's very addicting.
No, I tell you, I did studio audience warm up in Chicago I warmed up for the Jenny Jones show in Chicago, which I don't call it warming up anymore. I call it chumming the water. I would sort of dump the blood in, and the sharks would come. Nothing against Jenny, of course. Jenny's a sweet, sweet woman. But great. They're great audiences.
One thing that Brad just touched upon too, which I think makes this play enormously successful, is not only his fine writing, but also the actors that have been cast in the play. And I say that unbiasedly. I mean, there's two different casts that he's put out there, and they're all highly qualified actors, and some that are kind of new on the scene, too. And I think you've taken a chance with those people.
Why two casts?
Well, several reasons. One, I ran into a problem in our first run of this where we would run into some professional problems. You know, the problem with theater, and maybe, obviously Broadway would be a little different because you can pay them a living wage, but you cannot pay actors a living wage and doing local theater probably anywhere in the world except, you know, London and New York. And so you get people that just don't treat it professionally, and you have to have it because the audience is paying real money to come see it. So I wanted to always be able to fire somebody, to be honest, if they weren't acting, they weren't giving 100% offstage and 100% onstage. So that's part of it. Second part of it is that just the influx of new energy and new actors into it brought everybody who had done, like 6 of my actors have been doing it for 2 years. They needed that extra boost of new people. They needed that kind of whisper out behind their shoulder of like, hey, that person's doing my same role and they're trying new things and see the other person try new things. Mm-hmm. And then we want to extend, and we want to regionally tour throughout kind of the Southwest, leading into 2014 in New York. And so I want to be able to kind of run two casts and to be able to train them all at the same time felt more optimal.
No, it's really wise. I mean, do you know how many times we've been doing a show? Someone books what's happened to us with Seaglass. Well, someone books a show, you know, gets a TV show, and then all of a sudden, I mean, you're upset about it, but you can't blame them. I mean, it's the money. It's the money.
And most actors at this level have to work bartending jobs and waiter jobs, and what are the most profitable nights? Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And what are the nights that we have to run as a theater company? Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it also gives them a little flexibility to, yes, dedicate all their, when they're on stage, they're 100% present, and then they can take a Friday off and get paid.
One of the additional benefits to having a double cast is if people come back to see the show again. Because it's not just cast A and cast B. I think we call team assholes and team crazy.
Okay.
But team crazy and team assholes, one's not better than the other. Right. It's they're just different, and we'll integrate variations of those casts. So conceivably, you could come back and see the show 2 and 3 times, and I believe the producer is allowing us a discount for those that do that.
Yeah.
But we're sold out, so it's tough to get tickets anyway. But it makes for an interesting experience for the audience.
Yeah, the LA Times saw the you know, there's 10 actors, and they all have about the same amount of stage time. But the emotional center of the story is this character named Nicole. And the LA Times saw it with Mandy Henderson, who's been doing the play for 2 years and is fabulous in a row, done it a million times and great. But Broadway World came on Friday for Nicole Callahan's first performance ever and gave her a rave kind of note.
She was great, too.
Rave note about it, and it's her first time ever doing it. So it's nice. It does give different energy.
That is nice, and nothing against the actresses, because I'm sure they're wonderful, but that's a testament to good writing.
Absolutely.
And good direction, too.
Thank you.
So, that's just...
Because often you can have a great actor, and if you don't have the great words to say, it doesn't really make any difference.
Right, right. And also, but... one of the things that you said earlier that I want to comment on, too, is the great thing about people being able to come and see subsequent shows or another cast doing the same thing is it goes back to the thing that I always treasure about live theater in general, and that is that what happens in that room will only be shared by those people.
Right.
It's the same script the next night, you know, but it's the dynamic of that room, the energy of that room, the way that the audience reacts to it, the way the actors respond to the audience. It's just, it'll never be duplicated. It can only be shared by those people. And if we could just get that out there to get people away from Netflix and get them off the couch and in their cars in Los Angeles, but it doesn't sound like it's too much of a challenge for you guys if it's selling as well as it is.
They have buses coming up. Don't you have buses?
We had a bus from the South Bay.
Well, that's one thing I appreciate about the LA Times review, and I always wish if they'll just acknowledge what happens in the room, not your personal view of the writing or the directing or the characters or whatever, because these characters are some of them aren't particularly likable always, but how does the audience respond? Right. And that's what the Times gave us, and we appreciate it. One of the things, going back to your point about mixing the cast, I was on stage on recently, and it was the night that the Times was there, and things were different for me because I had just worked with another actress opposite me the day before. And it made me better having had that experience back with the original actress that originated the role. And it's sort of mixing it up in a good way. It makes it exciting. I know you've done the same thing, too, with different actresses.
It makes you better if you're a good actor who listens.
Well said.
That's one of those things that, you know, there's a lot of people who just, like, doesn't matter what you come at them with, they've locked into their portrayal, and it's just going to be that. So that's passively complimented yourself without realizing it.
But I wish I could bottle what happened the other night, but we can't, you know. That's the challenge and the opportunity of live theater. It was one of the reasons
And also the beauty of it.
Well, the people who were there that night got a sip to carry the bottled metaphor over.
Exactly.
Got a sip. You've seen it a couple of times, right?
I've seen it only actually once.
Really?
Yeah.
You were I remember before you were...
I had seen clips of it prior to
but I remember you were a little off-put by the title because you are
I wasn't off-put, I was concerned.
You were concerned. Yeah.
I was concerned about the reaction, not for me necessarily, but for the reaction from some media people.
Mm-hmm. Because you swear a blue streak, you know. People don't know that.
What the hell are you talking about?
Can I tell the F story? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just
if you must.
Yeah. Michael would get mad at me because I would swear on the air because I'm
not half, very often.
I'm half Italian often. And half German, so I'm very
need we
passionate
say
in my need to control the world. And I would I used the F word, and it was in early December, and Michael's just got those cashmere vocal cords where he can just totally, you know, just knock you down. Mm-hmm. And I just said the F word, and he went, "Oh, Paul on Christmas." And it was just like stabbed me right in the heart. So yeah, that was the reason I thought you were a little concerned.
No, not really for me at all. Really, just to be protective of the product, and to, it's, you know, I couldn't agree more with this Los Angeles Times review, having sat there myself on a wonderful opening night, and seeing this play unfold. It's way more than what that title implies. I think it's everything that title implies, but much more.
It sounds, I haven't seen it, obviously, but just with what is being said, it sounds like there's a lot more depth to it than the title implies.
Yeah, and it moves like a lightning rod.
Right.
I mean, the first act is what, 38 minutes? Something?
34.
Something, 30, okay. Yeah. Quick, which is great because you're just kind of flying through it, and then you have this relaxing intermission for about 20 minutes. Yeah. And then you go back for a 48-minute?
About 42 minutes.
42
so
minutes.
So it's pretty quick, and that's what we always promise people. They can turn off their cell phones for those 33 minutes. You know,
like, I
promise they'll be able to last, and it's nice. And people, you know, and people like the speed of things. You know,
Yes, they do.
I grew up, obviously, you know, loving TV and movies and didn't have much exposure to theater, really, besides the big Broadway stuff that would come to Chicago, until I got to Los Angeles and saw a bunch of, you know, local, like my actor friends doing theater. And they were just doing plays from the 1960s and 70s and without the, you know, great stars of those years to maintain your interest. And they move extraordinarily slow, a lot of them. And it's a tough watch. And I wanted people to come in and never be bored.
Yeah.
And that's what
I
think.
No, leave them wanting more. And the big mistake so many people make, you know, a two-hour show is twice as good as a one-hour show is not, you know.
Yeah,
Are you from Chicago originally?
I'm from Chicago, the suburbs.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So yeah. I lived there from, 87 to 96 I was in Chicago. I used to tend bar at a place called Glasgow's on North Halsted Street.
Okay. You know Chicago. I grew up in the suburbs. So
which suburb?
Glenview, which is next to Evanston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And so my view of Chicago was,
we used to call you 708s.
Yeah.
We used to call you guys 708s at the bar. We got a bunch of 708s. Of course, that area code applies to everything. But for a while, it was just like, we had a lot of 708s last night. I want to, you mentioned, Michael, the Los Angeles Times review, but I have some other reviews here. This is, speaking of Chicago, some of the, and there's one here that just sort of leapt out at me, so I want to share it with the listeners. But before I do, Michael, give the stats for people to see this thing.
Absolutely.
If they can. I know it's extended, but are there tickets available?
Well, it's
this weekend sold out.
Okay.
Next weekend, we have about 10 tickets per show. It will probably sell out by Monday, is my guess, the pattern of this. So, and then we'll have the weekend of August 23rd through 25th. There's a few tickets left. But then we're extending through September, and there's plenty of tickets right now for September.
Oh, okay.
But that's a month away, and it's hard for people to plan, but the way tickets have been going is if you try to get it the day before, you're not going to get tickets.
Well, this also sounds like, and the reason people might want to do this early, this sounds like the definitive date or group show.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Because you just, because it hits both. You can either have a man and a woman who laugh their asses off, or a bunch of women together, and women buy theater tickets, as we know.
Well, and it's also very, you know, some other cool components are, it's located in a fantastic section of West Hollywood, right next to the great Hugo's restaurant, which is a great place to come and dine.
Oh, one of the few places in town you can walk to stuff.
Yeah, parking is not a problem. They've got a big parking lot across the street. Yeah. It's probably a nominal pay.
Yeah,
a few bucks
for the night. Yeah.
So that in itself overcomes two big problems.
There's a place I love over there, parking next to there. There's a place I go to all the time.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Tattoos Against Your Will? Have you been?
Okay,
sorry.
Gee,
oh,
that hurts.
Thank God.
No,
thank God.
The Matcha Theater, ladies and gentlemen, which is also a very cool theater. It used to be called the Globe Theater, the old Globe, and it was patterned after the original old Globe.
Is that the one where Bark ran forever?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's, of course, located at 1107 North Kings Road in West Hollywood. And Though the show opened on the 25th of July, as our guest just said, Brad Gottfried, the playwright and producer and director of the show. Well, you don't produce it too much, do you? You just direct.
I do some nominal production stuff. You know, yeah. Blake here, my wonderful actor, is actually a co-producer, yeah, and he does a lot of important work for me.
And Dave Francis.
And Dave Francis was, yes, the producer from the beginning, and kind of was the inspired me to kind of keep going forward.
You know? And Mandy Henderson.
And Mandy Henderson, who plays, right, Nicole, one of my actresses, who's been with her 2 years and has done amazing work.
She's great.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you can see this show on Friday evenings at 8 p.m., Saturdays at 5 and 8:30 p.m., and through Saturday, August 24th, with Sunday performances at 6 p.m. through the 25th of August. And now, because of the extension, that same schedule is going to extend itself with the exception of the following. And this is Labor Day weekend, Friday, August 30th, Sunday through Sunday, September 1st. There will be no performances on those 3 days, correct?
Right. Yeah. So right now, our final day will be September 29th.
Right. And to get tickets, you simply go to either the following official website, which is www.bleepingcrazy.com. Or you can certainly visit Brown Paper Tickets as well and get your tickets through that site. Bleepingcrazy.com will send you there, but I think it's probably a smart idea to actually stop in at Bleeping Crazy and take a look at all the wonderful stuff that's on that site. Right?
Definitely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm going to save my quotes for this show for the second half when we speak to Blake, which we will do in about 5 minutes. But I do want to share this review that I have in place of our arts calendar today.
They were so lovely, those people.
Weren't they great?
Yes, they
weren't
were.
Weren't they great?
Yes,
this
they
past
were.
Saturday put me in a dark but nonetheless very comfortable bar in what they're calling it Atwater Village adjacent, I think. But I think it was Atwater Village. It's a place called The Virgil, which is a great little bar over there. Monica and I were attending Dirty Laundry Lit Clothing Optional.
Monica being your wife.
Monica, my wife. Yes. This is the sixth in the series of Dirty Laundry Lit readings that created by Natasha Dionne, whose name I'm going to say correctly as often as possible to make up for the fact that last week I called her everything from Anastasia Leo to Nastasia Lee Von Helm. I called her everything. But even with the high expectation from what we've been told about Dirty Laundry Lit, I was completely blown away. The title, Clothing Optional, is certainly provocative, but there's far more at work here than just the titillation. The unabashed vulnerability of the readers and the razor-sharp work that they present is a welcome and vocal testament to the thriving literary culture in Los Angeles. All seven readers brought their A game. These are including Antonia Crane, Joseph A. Lapin, and Eric Layer. And while it is unfair to single anyone out, because in this case it is literally like picking through diamonds, I was moved by a few of them. Stephanie Green Smith's piece on growing up within a cult in Los Angeles was absolutely astonishing. Amanda Fletcher did a very poignant and darkly funny piece on her breast implants. Rue Freeman's story of being a newly arrived immigrant and singing the national anthem on a dare in a coffee shop in Maine was just as funny as it sounds, but very moving at the same time. And Billy Burgos' poetry, especially a piece that he wrote about being self-conscious about a scar that he had that he felt was sort of a tattoo of his personal history, had Monica and I both laughing and crying at the same time. The evening cooked along, due in no small part to host Jeff Ayers. Mr. Ayers, I've said it before, he is a 747. That is, if you're standing next to him, he can be a bit intimidating, and if he turns around too fast, he will break something. But much like a 747, he's not supposed to be on the ground, and once you get him aloft on a stage, preferably, you quickly see what he was designed to do, and he does it beautifully. The shows are one-nighters, so if you missed this one, which you did because it already happened, keep up to date on future readings by checking them out at dirtylaundrylit.com, and they're also on Facebook. Search for Dirty Laundry Lit. Really amazing.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you like it, and especially what you said about Jeff, because anybody that writes for Saturday Night Live and CNN Headline News and hosts it in a comedic way, and CNN allows him to do that.
Yeah. No, he doesn't perform enough, as I said. Yeah. And Natasha Dionne, I almost did it again. Yeah. Natasha, really has the pieces that she selects are such a part of composing this evening, and it was really just wonderful. Monica left. We got in the car. Monica just turned to me and said, "You know, the best compliment that I could give this production is that I want to go back to writing." It just inspired her to write, which is, you know, and cannot, you know, praise it to the skies.
Awesome.
Praise to the skies.
All right. Well, good for you, Paul. I like you. I like it when you get out to theater. You need to do it more often.
Yeah, and that was the whole thing. This wasn't it. This was a reading series, yeah. but it affected me as much as any great play I've seen.
You're so busy creating it.
Yeah.
You've got to get out and see it.
Plus, I have the whole addiction issue.
No, I'm kidding. It's another show. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest portrays Reynolds in the show we've been discussing, Women Are Crazy Because Men Are Assholes. He is a native of the Lone Star State and has appeared in over 35 theater, film, and television productions, including such features as Hot Guys with Guns, which looks pretty hysterical from the clips I've seen, First Kid, The Cable Guy, Rocket Man, and the television series ER, Pensacola and the Agency, and an original Women Are Crazy cast member. Please welcome the one and only Blake Boyd.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're serious now.
I got music.
It's all we got.
Some we gave him the applause, so we just... from the 80s.
Or was that 70s? What was that?
70s. I would say 70s.
I don't know. 70s? Is that about
who? I'm just too young to remember.
You and me both, kid.
Some of us do remember the 70s. It's a golden time.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Thanks
for
joining us.
Thank you.
Now, did you do original cast member? You did the Chicago production as well?
The first show I ever missed was the other night when my wonderful understudy, Hoyt Richards, went on for me. He did a great job, but I had done 65 shows, I think, to that point. I never missed one, along with Brad. And, I did Chicago. I did the workshop 2.5 years ago, and I got to tell you, it's been a ride.
How much has it changed from the workshop days? I mean,
Well, I had friends that saw the workshop production and then saw it again opening night, and it evolved quite a bit because, you know, we've got Brad's there every night as the writer, director, producer. He sees all the shows, and if a line's not working, we change it. We don't have to run it by a playwright or dramatist play services or the legal department of some studio. We just change it.
Right.
And a couple of lines in the play actually were mistakes that worked really, really well, and we kept them.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to talk to a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Here's the guy that decides, and we go with it. So we're a lot leaner. And Brad alluded to this earlier about you. He's got a lot more control over a theatrical play, and boy, we've sure capitalized on that.
One of the lines I heard that perfectly suits what you're saying is, there are no mistakes, just last-minute edits. Those are the ones that you... And well, it just makes it... I mean, it just makes it more conversational. Yeah. It makes it more natural.
Yeah. And we are told, Paul, pardon me for interrupting, we are told by Brad, if you screw up on your lines or if you go up or whatever, improv your way out. Just keep it real, keep it in truth.
Well.
Don't try to be funny. And so we have, live theater. There's no net.
Right.
You're up there, as you both well know.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of freedom in that, and one of the good things about Brad is he's created an environment where we take risks. We're not afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
We failed a few times, but we're not afraid to fail. And the results, so eloquently expressed by the LA Times, they've touched a nerve.
I would rather watch an actor fail while being real than fall back on a line reading or a phrasing that he knows will win, because, you know, that this show would not have what is already longevity if it was that, because that's, you know, bubblegum.
Yeah, in Chicago, consistently, we'd have people say, they leave the theater and go, you know what, that's how people really talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they act. And again, maybe I shouldn't say this, but we're about truth here. There's some people don't like our play,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, quintuple the number love it as those that don't find it to be their thing.
You also run into that. You know, it's like, you know, if you create theater that everyone is going to like, you end up with Full House.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You end up with Chardonnay. You end up with something that is completely vanilla, that is completely bland. I mean, the great quote of Bill Cosby's is, I don't know the recipe for success, but I know the recipe for failure is trying to please everybody.
Yeah.
And I would, it sounds like it's got a little teeth. Yeah. It sounds like it's something that people, you know, really embrace. Take that over.
Well, you know, and Brad once said, this is not a message play. We're not going to some deeper meaning of the truths of life. You know, we're not Kinky Boots. We're not Annie. We're not the Odd Couple.
Right.
We're something that's deeper, in my opinion, than all those plays, which are wonderful.
Right.
But You know, and I just I'm sorry to keep referring to it, but the LA Times tapping into a nerve, that's the best.
But that's just it. If people, you may not have an intentional message, but you're getting a message across if people identify with those characters.
Well, and again, some of the relationships, some of the characters, an argument could be made, they don't evolve at all.
Right. And some people don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I like it.
Most people don't.
I liken it to Darth Vader in Episode 4. He just spins out into the orbit into his spaceship, just kind of spinning out. We know he's going to be back. He's probably not going to be any different. Well, that's some of the characters in our play. A couple of characters you think, maybe they're going to evolve. Well, maybe they will. Maybe they'll evolve. So, but that's life.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Do you find it... Do you have any experience with this style of dating, of the internet dating?
You know, the funny thing is, Brad, who's like a brother to me, as much as I don't want to admit it, and he probably doesn't want to either, he forced me to get on a dating website the other day. Because I'm horrible at it. Because I, you know... I think
Wait. You're horrible at it like it's something that you...
Blake is a great guy, and he deserves a great girl, but he needs to put himself out there, you know?
I met
my wife a year ago on Match.com, and Blake deserves to find the same
you know, Blake, you're single?
Yeah.
Let me just say this. It's hard to believe. He's a very striking man.
Thank you.
And it just seems odd to me that you would. I mean, and why not the dating website?
I'm nuts, Paul. Sorry, I'm nuts. This walking around like Captain America, like I've got it all together. It's complete BS. You know, that's why Brad's got me on stage. And it's like therapy. No, the girl's out there. I was telling a friend the other day, when I fall in love with my best friend, then I'll get married. But Brad's just trying to exacerbate
that
process.
Well, Blake, dating to me is a numbers game. And so what online dating does is you can go on 5 dates a week if you really want to do the work.
But, yeah.
And Blake needs to do the work.
And Brad, by the way, has got a great wife. Her name's Danica. She's lovely. She's an ER physician at Children's Hospital.
Oh, wow.
She's getting her master's in public health. I mean, he hit the jackpot.
Artists need a sugar mama.
I think that it doesn't happen as very often, what Brad got.
No, of course not.
That's something quite extraordinary.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, it's a whole new world.
Yeah,
I mean, I know. I can think of four couples that I know that are happily married because of internet.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
I mean, it just removes that initial question of, are you looking for somebody? Because obviously, if you're on a dating site, you're willing to put pictures of yourself and words about yourself up online to say, hey, I'm lonely.
Right.
Come find me and make me unlonely.
Ryan, Brad, I smiled at a girl this morning on one of the sites. Okay.
It's good. Okay. Good.
I can imagine, though. I can imagine no more surreal first date than you setting up a date. Look, I'm doing this play.
I thought about that.
Come to the play, and we'll meet for a drink afterwards. Uh-huh. I'll have a ticket waiting at the thing. And then the first introduction to you is you in this play.
I've actually thought about having the girl come, because if she can deal with some of the things that I do in the play, particularly one scene, then, hey, she... That's a big test.
That would actually be a hysterical thing. For when you film this thing, when you have the DVD extras... Totally film that. Have her arrive at the theater.
And give her the option of not having to stay at the end if she doesn't.
Oh, of course, She might run screaming into the night.
I would be devastated if that happened.
But you have to. It would have to be.
It would do a nice, you know, sift them out. You would lose the girls that weren't meant for you.
You'd spend your whole life. Is it because I wasn't attractive enough, or am I just a shitty actor?
Believe me, all that would go through the mind. The funny thing is I'm pretty aggressive in other areas of my life. I'm not afraid of much of anything, but you know, dating and relationships, they're not easy. I mean, you're my friend, Michael. What is this? No,
I'm your friend. I want to help.
It's been
you.
A while. Well, define a date. What's your definition of a date?
Not a date necessarily. I'm sure you've had dates.
Is having lunch with a beautiful girl who's a great friend considered a date?
No.
No,
I didn't ask you. I asked Michael.
No, it's a date for lunch, yeah. But, I mean, it's nothing more than that. It's not going to go anywhere else. You're not expecting it necessarily to go anywhere else, are you?
Paul, you had some reviews from Chicago.
You're jumping off. Well, you're jumping off the edge of the pool with a
lunch
date. I hear
you guys. Anyway. I love you both. I know you've got my best.
Well, we're going to take
heart.
Care of you between Brad and I. We will get. Have you? You'll be married before the end of the year.
I'm just. Yeah. I'm really intrigued by the line of women that have formed outside the studio. That's an
interesting. And they will continue to do so. I think it might. You might be just a little too picky, perhaps. Huh? I don't know.
We'll discuss this.
We'll have you back.
It is a skill. It is a skill like anything else. It is a skill. You're either comfortable with it or you're not comfortable with it. I was lucky enough to meet Monica when I was younger. I mean, Monica and I have been together 23 years.
Wow.
Which is really unpleasant you consider that she still looks like she's 23. So I just go from looking like her father to her grandfather and now the man she cares for. But I got very lucky very young.
Well, yeah, you did. And I mean, I think that, you know, love finds all of us. It eventually, there's somebody out there, and it's all a matter of timing and where you are.
But I think it is a miracle when it actually works, when the timing is right, when you're ready, when they're ready. It's nothing short of a miracle.
But then again...
You also just got to do the work.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And there is work. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there is work involved. You're right about that. And also, you know, you can find that right person that you think is right, and you can think they're right for many years, and then suddenly they're not right. And you're not right. So it goes away.
You know, it seems to me that this, and obviously it's not a gimmick that you need to employ for this production because it's doing so well, but, and I'm sure this has occurred to you because you seem to have a great marketing acumen, but the idea of one night a week of the show being a singles night and, you know, doing it through the singles websites and all that. No, I mean, just you talk about a great no-risk way to really pack the place. That would be a lot of fun. And then you could go out and lobby afterwards. You just have your pick.
We can announce in the beginning of the show, and these actors are also single.
These following actors will be in the lobby with numbers on their foreheads. Just mark your card. And the Chicago Review quote that I wanted to read earlier that Blake called to my attention. Thank you for reminding me. Director and writer Brad T. Gottfried has created a wonderful, well-rounded pool of characters that keep the audience laughing from start to finish. The writing is sharp, the comedic timing is spot on, and the theme is something everyone is familiar with, how men and women somehow manage to coincide with each other without strangling one another. It's a great quote.
That's right. And it gets you, this play gets you right from the first moment. I mean, in the first few minutes. It's just, it's there.
It would have to.
It doesn't take 20 minutes.
With a first act that length, and then a second act that's not much longer, you have you got to hit the ground running.
Right.
But yet, going on the road is going to be great, because the first, as I said, I was on the road, we were talking in the lobby beforehand, I was on the road for 9 years with this one-man show, 1,400 performances.
Wow.
And the first question every venue asks you, is there an intermission? Because they want to sell.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to sell. So
our show sells well for for those that like to imbibe.
Imbibe,
And it helps us, you know, a little looser. There's a lesbian scene. I wouldn't have found that funny if I was totally sober, but with one drink in me, that's hilarious.
We were in Chicago.
That's just the women speaking.
We're on stage. All the actors are pretty much on stage the entire time.
Right.
But we go to dark. And so you can't help but not look. You can't help but look at some of the audience members.
Sure.
And it's interesting because there's certain people, particularly in Chicago, which is a theater town, you see some people, maybe an older couple, and you think, well, there's no way they're going to be here at intermission.
Right.
They're going to leave. Well, oftentimes, most of the time, not only did they stay, they moved down closer, and they're laughing.
I can't see the lesbians from here, Mildred.
And it was amazing. Well, that's in the second one. But it's really amazing to figure out what. And a couple of one audience was just eerily quiet the entire time. At intermission, we're like, "What's going on? What's going on?" I says, "Don't worry, I'm watching them. They're fine." Standing ovation at the end of the play.
You never know.
You never know.
You never know. It's the same thing with reviewers.
Some people just, I personally am not a loud laugher. You know, I smile in like utter bemusement.
Right there with you. Yeah.
And so, you know, and sometimes you just get a huge audience full of them, and you guys still have to enjoy, they're enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And they're emotionally invested. So some of the more rewarding moments for me are not the laughs, but the those are like, okay, we got them, because then the laughs are earned from that.
Right. You know? No, you can't tell the way they're taking it in. You know, we've all done shows where it's just like, oh man, that just was like dead people sitting up, and then you talk to them afterwards and they were like, no, this was, you know, they just absolutely loved it. People react differently.
Shall we tell people how to see the show?
I was
one
just
going
to ask you to do that, Michael.
Yeah, I will do
would
that.
You? You have it at the ready?
I do.
Oh, wait a minute. This North Kings Road, is Merrick still there, the Mexican place? Is that still there?
Yeah.
That's another thing to tell
people
about.
Yes, it's a great place.
One of the great margaritas in town at Merrick's.
Exactly.
Not that I ever partake.
Lady! Hi! Oh, Paul. Okay, Macho Theater, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're talking about. Women are crazy because men are assholes, and the theater is located at 1107 North Kings Road, West Hollywood, right in the heart of where it's really happening there. And the performance schedule is Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And the extension on this show, which has just been announced, is through September 29th. But we urge you to go to bleepingcrazy.com and navigate through that website. It'll give you the opportunity to go to purchase tickets, and that will take you to brown paper tickets. So remember those two things, brown paper tickets. Bleepingcrazy.com will get you there, and you are in for a night that's going to be a very bumpy ride.
Night to remember.
Great fun.
Night to remember.
Yeah.
It is that time, Michael. We have 5 minutes left in the show. This is at the point where we usually ask our guests to share a performance nightmare, disaster, some embarrassing thing that happened to them during performance. One of them seems a little more ready to go than the
other. I'll start. I'll let Blake think a bit. So like we were talking earlier, that the audience members liked to have a few drinks. And and we also attract a non-traditional theater goers. So we get some audience members that think that they should be part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's several times I had to stop the show and speak to people about yelling at the actors on stage. And one particular moment, my producer actually stopped it. And because this woman was yelling at the male characters. She was so angry with all the male characters. And he's like, ma'am, you have to quiet. We're going to have to leave. And I had been watching her all the time. And I'm like, nope, she's got to get out of here right now. Because you could just tell she had just enough to drink. She was not going to listen to anybody.
Right, right.
And she was not going to stop yelling at the. But then there was this one bus full of young ladies who came. And they loved it. And they were throwing all their jokes in there. And we stopped and said, hey, listen, we would love to kind of chat with you afterwards, and we'll have a good time, and we'll all go out. And I think a few of them came out to the bars with us.
Yeah.
But you got to let the other audience enjoy the show. Yeah. And when we kicked that one lady out, the rest of the audience cheered.
Yeah.
Did she go fighting her way out, or did she go willingly at that point?
No, she fought a little bit. She was yelling, and she was angry. She was burned badly by some men, and it was just, this was bringing up some stuff.
Fueled by being a little inebriated.
Yeah,
as well.
And then the you know, it's just whether you get that glass.
I don't know why she got burned. She sounds like quite the catch.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yep. You got one?
Well, yes, and it actually is one of those instances. I'm not exactly sure which one, but I mean, whenever you have to stop a show and turn the lights on and kick someone out, I mean, that ranks up there as pretty impactful. Yeah. Well, one of those shows, I can't remember, we had, I think, three. We stopped, we go, and this was after a couple of pretty hot sex scenes, one of which is two girls. We're about to start again, and Brad, the director, goes, okay, Kevin, take us back to the beginning of blah, 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 and guys, we're going to take the lights down. We'd like you to cheer. The lights will come back up, and we'll begin again. One guy in the back, probably drunk, goes, go back to the lesbian scene! That's my best story.
You really can't, you know, after that happens...
You mean you don't have anything from Glendale Center Theater, any of these other theaters that you've
Not that I'm going to talk publicly, Michael.
Really? All right, we'll save that for another time.
I was in the Chicago suburbs doing my show at the Crossroads Theater in Naperville, and I was there and second weekend, and just on stage and just start the show. It's just me, you know, for an hour and a half, and the whole, just like as loud as that is,
yeah,
and I I just was would I was doing characters, so the
tell the audience and our guest the name of the show and the tagline. The show was called
Straight Up with a Twist, and it predated the whole metrosexual thing, and the tagline was the world's a cruel place when you're a straight guy with good taste and a great eye for color. And it was the whole, you know, it was about 3 years before Queer Eye for the Straight Guy hit and all that stuff. It was 99 that I wrote it, and so it did well, and but this sound is just coming at me, and I'm just in character. I'm just saying, would somebody look into that? An oxygen pump in the audience, like 2 feet away from me, the entire show. And what do? You can't get angry at someone because their lungs are collapsing. I mean, what do? You can't do anything about it. But it's just one of those things. And then you reminded me of this one. Had when I did the show in New York, four bachelorette parties in one show.
Four separate
bachelorette parties came, culminating with one of them throwing up on the audience members in front of them.
Nice touch.
She's a lady. Yeah, just really. She said she was a fool to dream.
Gentlemen, how nice.
What a pleasure having both of you on here. This was great.
Really enjoyed it. And thank you, Michael Sterling, for being so wonderful to our show and facilitating great things for it.
My pleasure, indeed. And Paul, thank you. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen, and Sharon, as well as Michael, sharing the mic with you. And we look forward to talking to you all next week.
See you on the radio.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk Radio.